by and by, when that morning comes, when all of the saints of God is gathered home, we'll tell a story how we overcome, but we'll understand it better by and by.
From New Orleans, Louisiana, that's trumpeter, singer, and composer Kermit Ruffins and the Rebirth Jazz Band and the One Accord Gospel Singers with an old standard, By and By. It's track number 4 on his 2001 album, 1533 St. Philip Street. Yes, that's the name of the album. And it also happens to be the address of the Jazz and Blues Hall, Ruffin's Club in New Orleans. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we'll be talking about the unifier-in-chief, Barack Obama, shining a light where the problems are already known. You know, this is like an old joke, in a way. You know, the joke of a guy comes upon another guy under a street lamp, appearing to be looking for something. And he asks, what's wrong? The guy said, I lost my keys. And he says, well, where do you think you lost them? And the fellow points a little distance away. He says, I think I lost them over there. So curiously, the guy who comes upon him says, well, why are you looking over here? And he said, because the light is here. It's an old joke. You must have heard it a million times. But it is very symbolic of how politicians operate. In the aftermath of this tragic week we experienced last week, we find President Obama doing his best to fulfill his mandate, as he sees it, as unifier in chief. America is really unified, much more so than people are apt to think, he says. But we could always use a little more unity. Remember, we've been talking about clarity, not unity, is really what's needed. He is fulfilling, as president and commander-in-chief, he's fulfilling his predictable role by undertaking these very public meetings, by being seen at the funerals, for example, just yesterday. He is coordinating lots of chats and talks and conversations, that's a popular word, a national conversation on the thing that has no name. And so in this role, he's also serving multiple purposes because it happens to be an election year. He happens to have endorsed Hillary Clinton. He happens to be on the stump for her already. And he has a vested interest in also, I suppose, building and protecting this so-called legacy of his two terms as he leaves office this year, next year. So President Barack Obama met for more than 4 hours at the White House with a diverse group of leaders yesterday, the same day he spoke at the funeral of five police officers killed by an ex-soldier in a sniper attack, as you recall, on July the 7th in Dallas, Texas. The Unifier-in-Chief said he wanted their ideas and input on how to build trust between police and the communities they serve. Well, it so happens that this very mandate, this very thing that he says he now desires more so than at any other time in office, also was the main focus of a task force that he created by executive order in December of 2014. In fact, it's called the President's Task Force on 21st Century Policing. Well, that says it all, doesn't it? This task force was made up of luminaries from all different spheres of influence in the United States. And so urgent was this need to know what to do, he gave them at first a 90-day window to get something on paper to him so that he and his administration could get to work right away. And they did. They hurried up. They did some serious work. They stretched a bit beyond their 90 days because, of course, you can't, as they say, Rome wasn't built in a day. A task force report isn't built in 90 days. But they did a very good job. And in May of last year, they delivered unto the president a 116-page report complete with recommendations for nationwide changes that they said needed to be made. And they identified six key areas. The report readily admitted that they couldn't undertake a more comprehensive treatment of the issue because of time and resources. But mind you, this report came in the context of and in the aftermath of some of the most blatant police brutality issues in the country at the time that were beginning to reverberate not just nationally, but internationally. And he had to respond. And, of course, the way most leaders respond is by proxy. They appoint a blue ribbon panel. It's a bunch of, they share the responsibility. They get a bunch of people who will take the hit. And they form these panels, give them the authority to do things, make recommendations and so forth. And so he did that. In December of 2014, and they finished their work in May of the following year, delivering a 116-page report. So the six areas that they identified were titled as follows: Building Trust and Legitimacy, Policy and Oversight, Technology and Social Media, Community Policing and Crime Reduction, Training and Education, and Officer Wellness and Safety. Those were the headings. They called them in the report, they called them pillars. These are the pillars of the report, and under each of these headings, they went into greater detail because they did hold public hearings and they did meet with experts in the field and so forth. They did a lot of work compiling many, many, many suggestions as to what could be done. And yet, the president acts as though this report doesn't exist. He continues to plead for a deeper understanding of and solutions for the so-called trust problem. So is it that he had no faith or respect for the work of his own presidential task force on 21st century policing, which, by the way, included many police experts? So he didn't trust that report, the validity of their ideas, or he considered them deficient or not standard, or he had problems with what they suggested? That he would need more information in the very next year. They delivered their report last year. This year, he needs a new one. He needs something new. At least this is what he's telling us. And, of course, yesterday's meeting at the White House was well covered. They gave access to the media, not very much to the non-mainstream media, but it's on record that he had this meeting and basically combined the efforts of all these deep thinkers and leaders across the nation in the aftermath of this rise in mass killings and in, quote, gun violence, unquote. Well, okay, let's say the president, maybe he liked what they said, this august body that he himself convened in 2015. Let's say he had problems with what they suggested. I took it upon myself, and I encourage you to do it. If you go online and you type in as a search major reports on policing in the United States, well, you will have to have several months available to you in which you will do nothing but read what has been produced on the subject of policing. So if you don't trust your own presidential task force and the multiple reports generated by your own agencies, the Department of Justice and all the police departments across the country, if you don't trust those, you don't trust the books by experts in policing, and there are literally hundreds, if not thousands, of books and scholarly papers and articles written about the problems of policing. If you don't trust your own presidential blue ribbon panel, do some other reading. Go outside of your panel and you have all this available to you to find out what the problem is, which is one thing, or what the problems are. But more so, you would also get, because I've read quite a few of these, they're very, very circumspect about delineating solutions. They have solutions. So you see what I'm getting at? What I'm getting at is that there really isn't an interest, when you boil it down, there's no genuine interest in knowing or learning what the solutions are, because if you know it, you're going to have to do something about it. You'll have to implement the change, wouldn't you? But we've discussed what systems are about. They're designed to resist change. So here's the president. He doesn't trust anybody else. He's putting his own imprint, his own imprimatur on the subject of improving best practices in policing, in law enforcement in the United States. So he constructs his own panel and then doesn't trust what it says. gives it very little attention with regard to the substantial recommendations that they've made. And that's just last year. Certainly it was in the aftermath of Ferguson and the chokehold death of Eric Garner and the continued executions of people of color, mostly by police, that roiled the nation and that started to get people in the street. But he saw, as early as 2014, that 2016 was coming, the election year, and he's going to have to respond, if not for the sake of the Democratic Party, but the sake of his legacy as the unifier in chief, the guy who's going to heal this country of its racist ways. So I get back to the story. This presidential task force decided to shine a very bright light, and they did it. They delivered it to him last year. Let me read some of the recommendations. It starts, actually, the recommendations of this report begin on page 85. Of a 116-page document. And I read it. I read the document. And I remembered the appointment of this task force because much was made of it. This progressive president interested in solving the problem of trust. Here are some of the recommendations, and you tell me what you think. The president should support and provide funding for the creation of a national crime and justice task force to review and evaluate all components of the criminal justice system for the purpose of making recommendations to the country on comprehensive criminal justice reform. Did that happen? Mm-mm. The president should promote programs that take a comprehensive and inclusive look at community-based initiatives that address the core issues of poverty, education, health, and safety. Law enforcement culture should embrace a guardian mindset to build public trust and legitimacy. Toward that end, police and sheriff's departments should adopt procedural justice as the guiding principle for internal and external policies and practices to guide their interactions with the citizens they serve. They're recommending, in other words, a move away from the concept of warrior police to police as guardians. Did that happen? Mm-mm. Another recommendation. The U.S. Department of Justice should develop and disseminate case studies that provide examples where past injustices were publicly acknowledged by law enforcement agencies in a manner to help build community trust. Law enforcement agencies should establish a culture of transparency and accountability in order to build public trust and legitimacy. This will help ensure decision-making is understood and in accord with stated policy. To embrace a culture of transparency, law enforcement agencies should make all department policies available for public review and regularly post on the department's website information about stops, summonses, arrests, reported crime, and other law enforcement data aggregated by demographics. When serious incidents occur, including those involving alleged police misconduct. Agencies should communicate with citizens and the media swiftly, openly, and neutrally, respecting areas where the law requires confidentiality. Another recommendation, law enforcement agencies should promote legitimacy internally. And you hear that? They should promote legitimacy internally. This is heavy stuff. I lost my space here for a minute. I'll get it back. The point I'm making here is it's not like these things don't exist. And the information has to be had anew and reinvented. This was already done. In order to achieve internal legitimacy, law enforcement agencies should involve employees in the process of developing policies and procedures. Law enforcement agencies should promote legitimacy internally within the organization by applying the principles of procedural justice. Law enforcement agency leadership should examine opportunities to incorporate procedural justice into the internal discipline process, placing additional importance on values, adherence, rather than adherence to rules. Union leadership should be partners in this process. Law enforcement agencies should proactively promote public trust by initiating positive non-enforcement activities to engage communities that typically have high rates of investigative and enforcement involvement with government agencies. In order to achieve external legitimacy, law enforcement agencies should involve the community in the process of developing and evaluating policies and procedures. Law enforcement agencies should institute residency incentive programs, such as resident officer programs. Law enforcement agencies should create opportunities in schools and communities for positive non-enforcement interactions with police. Agencies should also publicize the beneficial outcomes and images of positive trust-building partnerships and initiatives. Use of physical control equipment and techniques against vulnerable populations, including children, elderly persons, pregnant women, people with physical and mental disabilities, limited English proficiency, and others, can undermine public trust and should be used as a last resort. Law enforcement agencies should carefully consider and review their policies toward these populations and adopt policies if none are in place. Law enforcement agencies should consider the potential damage to public trust when implementing crime-fighting strategies. Research conducted to evaluate the effectiveness of crime-fighting strategies should specifically look at the potential for collateral damage of any given strategy on community trust and legitimacy. Law enforcement agencies should track the level of trust in police by their communities just as they measure changes in crime. Annual community surveys, ideally standardized across jurisdictions and with accepted sampling protocols, can measure how policing in that community affects public trust. The federal government should develop survey tools and instructions for use of such a model to prevent local departments from incurring the expense and to allow for consistency across jurisdictions. Law enforcement agencies should strive to create a workforce that contains a broad range of diversity, including race, gender, language, life experience, and cultural background, to improve understanding and effectiveness in dealing with all communities. The federal government should create a law enforcement diversity initiative designed to help communities diversify law enforcement departments to reflect the demographics of the community. The department overseeing this initiative should help localities learn best practices for recruitment, training, and outreach to improve the diversity as well as the cultural and linguistic responsiveness of law enforcement agencies. Discretionary federal funding for law enforcement programs could be influenced by that department's efforts to improve their diversity and cultural and linguistic responsiveness. Law enforcement agencies should build relationships based on trust with immigrant communities. This is central to overall public safety. Decouple federal immigration enforcement from routine local policing for civil enforcement and non-serious crime. Law enforcement agencies should ensure reasonable and equitable language access for all persons who have encounters with police or who enter the criminal justice system. It goes on and on. We can't read all of it today, but it's enough to let you know that considerable thought and effort went into the recommendations that the president's own panel, his own task force, brought to him as an official report in May of last year. The recommendations sound sane to me. They sound quite achievable. They sound, in fact, modest. They're not radical, which means that the recommendations seem to reflect a concern about moving fast on these matters and in a way that would accomplish something immediately. Rather than get overly complex and complicated, these are basic things that they could do right away. Here is your blueprint for progress in achieving trust. But right on the heels of that, the president's own Justice Department failed to do its job in delivering justice in Ferguson. The U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder said he can't see any way of bringing to justice Officer Darren Wilson, who shot and killed Michael Brown. The bar is so high, he said. An indictment and conviction under federal statutes is not likely to be achieved. And of course, we know what happened in that case. Darren Wilson walked away. And in the Eric Garner case, same thing. There was no way, really, because the bar is so high, to achieve justice. The Justice Department pretty much said there will be no justice. And we've seen this pattern over and over and over again. So I asked a question. What then was the reason for the president appointing this task force that came up with very credible recommendations? And it seems to me, I mean, I haven't double-checked each instance, but it seems to me a lot of these recommendations just stayed in the report. The president gets to look like a man of action, the unifier of the country. He's interested in getting this thing done. And yet, we don't see evidence that the recommendations of his own task force have been vigorously implemented, funded, and implemented. So you're joking. You're playing games. And we need to be real clear about this. Remember, I tell you, clarity is really important. Clarity is very important. Because we see a repeat. This report came in on the heels of a national reaction to what clearly was a problem. The problem isn't trust. They defined what the problem is. They're telling you the problem is systemic within law enforcement. And many of the people on this panel are themselves from law enforcement. They're telling you the problem not only is systemic, but it is also solvable. And they gave you an action plan. All we need, Mr. President, is for you to direct your agencies that function under your authority. You are the commander-in-chief here. You can direct that this must be done immediately. These things can be implemented immediately. But the president did not intend that. Because there would be a very high price to pay politically for taking an action like that. And he knew it. And they all knew it. Still, the task force did its job. Now comes implementation. And that's where it stops. The president politically could always defend himself. Actually, it's on the record. He moved diligently to address the problem. He gave it to some other folks to solve. But of course, he'll take credit for it. He's the president. So he named it the President's Task Force on 21st Century Policing. This is called reform. So there is a document that attests to the president's concern and his action on this issue, this burning issue in America. Now, we can't find evidence of the implementation of all of these recommendations that they made. And you can go look it up. You could go look it up. I'll give you the link. It's cops.usdoj, that's for the Department of Justice, .gov. cops.usdoj.gov. And that's the final report right there. His own Justice Department has it as the final report of this presidential task force, which in large measure said that through the Justice Department, at the direction of the U.S. Attorney General, in turn at the direction of the president, informed by this task force that he formed and ordered to be formed by executive order, here are the things that need to be implemented. But every day, we get bombarded with the news that things haven't changed, and they won't change. This report has been available since 2015 for enactment, for action. A whole year has passed, and it was exactly planned that way. Because if the president started enacting these recommendations last year when he received a report, which means by now we'd be almost a year and a half into reforming the law enforcement system. The reaction by the system to the president would have been politically damaging. They would have jammed him up, and he knows it. they would have jammed him up. And they would have shown him who actually has the right and the authority to change things around here. It's not him. You can run around talking about you, the commander-in-chief, all you want. But everybody knows who's boss. Everybody knows who calls the shots when it comes to policing in America. Everybody knows it. You're going to tell me there is no way that they can ascertain why? When you have the information available to you, and like I said before, if you don't trust your own task force, just put the call out to people who have written books about this, who've done academic studies about this, who've done detailed articles about this, and form your own conclusion. So the point I'm making is actually not a point, it's a charge I'm making, is that this is the nature of politics, disingenuous conduct. There is no interest in changing the law enforcement system. It is too risky politically. And that assignment is not going to be undertaken except by a person who is actually convinced that nothing will happen to him or her for making these so-called changes, reforms of the system. What? You want us to adopt the guardian approach, a guardian's mentality? We are warriors. We're not guardians. We have ultimate authority. Just last night, we saw a horrid video of a young man, 19 years old, cut down, just shot dead, because he did not, this is the explanation, he did not obey the police orders to put his hands in the air. He was killed. And even when he was down and mortally wounded, you could see it. The video shows it. They finished him off with a final bullet to the chest. White cops, white young man. So I asked a question. I mean, this is important to ask. With all of these things going on, your Justice Department for your entire 8 years in office, your Justice Department simply can't get the job done. Your Justice Department refuses to take on the business of true investigation and certain punishment for people who break the law within the law enforcement community. Your Justice Department hasn't delivered justice at all to the most oppressed communities, looking to you, Unifier-in-Chief, for leadership on this question, because their lives are at risk. We had a U.S. Senator from South Carolina on the floor of the U.S. Senate telling chapter 2 of his story, his plea. It's going to be in 3 chapters. Yesterday he told about how he, as a state official, as a member of Congress, and even as a member of the U.S. Senate, as he was entering the U.S. Senate, he was stopped. A police officer said, "Look, I don't know you. You show me some ID." Although he was wearing a pin, that all senators wear to identify themselves as members of the U.S. Senate. He talked about the numbers of times he had been pulled over and subjected to less than equitable treatment. But I come back to this president, shining a light. He's standing there before the world, shining his light on his ardent desire to create change, to enable trust and healing and all the other nonsensical terms that they start talking about, when we know what the problem is. He's shining a light where the problem is not, but won't dare get close to where the problem really is and fix it. But ultimately, this is the point. Ultimately, it all comes down to this. The people elected to fix these things can't or won't fix it. That's the clarity we ought to have. What I'm saying is that it is so illogical, and therefore you see the insincerity of it, when they say that in this issue of reforming law enforcement, they're looking for the public to participate. No, you have to use your sense. You have to have some clarity here. How meaningful do you think it's going to be when you expect people who are members of an oppressed class, a targeted group? How credible do you think this whole effort would be when you say, well, they participated in the reforms that we are recommending? It means that you allow them to participate because you understand that their ability to truly restructure things will be exceedingly limited. They don't have the power to run the policing and law enforcement community. They don't. But it's just playing games. But in any event, this is not the job of the people. It is the responsibility of the people who have been put there to do the job. And it is the responsibility of the people who put them there to insist that they do the job well. And when they don't, take them out of office. That's the only clarity you need to have. No other groups in the United States of America are asked to participate in their own oppression or will participate in their own oppression. But they certainly expect African Americans and Latinos to do that, without giving or yielding in any way credible amounts of authority to actually fix the structure. Or you can have cosmetic stuff. You know, we'll have meetings and we'll have non-threatening meetings and we'll do a lot of publicity and public relations type things. But the structure of that system will not be tampered with by any group or groups who are identified as oppressed in this country. It won't happen. Never mind the fact that they can trot out an Al Sharpton and say, well, you know, he was there, he participated with us in this effort. Or they have the perfunctory participation of civil rights leaders who are clear they have absolutely nothing to do with the real power and authority to make changes within the law enforcement community. They don't have that power. So in the end, we have to say that Barack Obama and his administration have been lethal to the interests of oppressed people in this country when it comes to policing. All this stuff that they're doing, covered by the television, the warm glow of the television lights, and nice pictures that go on the front pages of the daily newspaper. All these things have nothing to do with the structural problems. They're PR. They have everything to do with Barack Obama's enhancement of his legacy. He has not been made to answer this question I'm raising today. Let's go down this list of all of the recommendations made by the task force you appointed by executive order. And let's see how many of those recommendations were actually implemented to the fullest. James Brown gave us the answer to that. You're talking loud and saying nothing. This is the time when people with clarity should move in a different way in expressing their political will. You see, you can't tolerate something like that and tell me, well, you're a politically conscious person. You're not. You have the president fully enmeshed in a campaign to elect the wife of a former president who enacted treacherous laws that created or helped to create the largest prison population on the planet. And a good chunk of that population are people from the oppressed groups of this country. So connect the dots. All of a sudden, Hillary Clinton is very empathetic. She's just pathetic. But she's empathetic to the needs for good policing in African American and Latino communities particularly. But as we're seeing, this is not any longer. They've been so good at getting away with it in the African American and Latino communities. It's spreading. That video that I saw of this young man being cut down like a dog in the street, it should bother everybody. And what it is saying is that we're in charge. We're not listening to you and your business, your cries for so-called reform. Policing is about power, the extended power of the state. You doubt me? Then I ask you to pay attention to none other than Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor. She just said that none other than the Supreme Court itself has given permission to the law enforcement community to do whatever it wants to do with the rights of individuals. I will read a piece of her opinion in this case. She is saying that the case involved a man who was ordered to stop by the police. The police stopped and were attempting to do a search. He resisted that, but in the end, the police were able to conduct the search, and in the search, they came upon some drugs that he had in his pocket. This is a white man. The police officers were successful in making the case against him for possession of drugs, even though the initial stop was on the premise that he had expired tags. The case went to the U.S. Supreme Court. And they sided with the police. She says in her dissent, "It is no secret that people of color are disproportionate victims of this type of scrutiny." She likened it to the new Jim Crow. She says, "For generations, black and brown parents have given their children the talk, instructing them never to run down the street. Always keep your hands where they can be seen. Do not even think of talking back to a stranger, all out of fear of how an officer with a gun will react to them. By legitimizing the conduct that produces a double consciousness, this case tells everyone, black and white, guilty and innocent, that an officer can verify your legal status at any time. It says that your body is subject to invasion while courts excuse the violation of your rights. It implies that you are not a citizen of a democracy, but the subject of a carceral state just waiting to be cataloged. We must not pretend that the countless people who are routinely targeted by police are somehow isolated incidents. They are the canaries in a coal mine whose deaths, civil and literal, warn us that no one can breathe in this atmosphere. They are the ones who recognize that unlawful police stops corrode all our civil liberties and threaten all our lives. Until their voices matter too, our justice system will continue to be anything but." This is a U.S. Supreme Court justice. So keep in mind that many times, especially in the midst of a crisis, when you see certain moves being made, it's not about justice. It's about political expediency. It's not a genuine interest in promoting equality and democracy or anything like that. It's simply, I got to get out of here, and I got to have an afterlife, and I do not intend to jeopardize myself. Thanks for joining me today. I hope this means something to you and you got something out of the program. You let me know at leadstories@gmail.com. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories@gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege. I mean that, to be in your company. And tomorrow we will enjoy each other's company again with Free Your Mind Friday. Get your brains in gear. Bye-bye. See you tomorrow.